Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Teach Me to Talk with Laura and Kate. I'm Laura Mize, pediatric speech language pathologist, and I'd like to welcome you to our show.
Hi, Laura. This is Kate Hensler. I am a developmental interventionist, and I work with 0 to 3-year-old kids with in the First Steps program in Kentucky.
That's right. And tonight we're going to pick up where we left off 2 weeks ago. It's Thursday, April 2nd, 2009. And if you're listening at 6 o'clock Eastern time, you're listening live, and we would love to have you join us for the show by calling in. And I don't happen to have a call-in number with me. Kate, do you have it in your stuff tonight?
I do.
Oh, wait. Oh, go ahead.
And let's mention there is a special incentive for calling in tonight. I'm going to remind Laura of that. The call-in number is 1-718-766-4332.
And we'd love to have your questions about anything related to language development in young children. But tonight in particular, we're going to continue talking about receptive language. And if you'll remember from our earlier discussion, receptive language means how well your child understands the words that he hears. And so we talked about the cues that speech-language pathologists and developmental interventionists use to help teach children language who are struggling. And usually those cues are visual cues, verbal cues, and tactile cues. And the little tagline that I developed in the DVD, Teach Me to Listen and Obey, to help parents remember that is tell him, show him, help him. So first you'll tell a child what you want them to do. Then if he doesn't seem to be understanding, then you're going to go to that next step, which would be the visual cue part, and show him what you want him to do. You can do that by showing the object that you're talking about or by pointing. And then the last thing would be help him. And that would be by providing hands-on assistance to actually get up. If you've told him to go get his milk, that would be that you take him and lead him across the room and put his hands on the cup and say, get your milk. And you're really helping him do the command that you asked him to do. So we talked about how to give those cues last time, and we talked about some milestones. Tonight we're going to talk about the very first kinds of commands or requests that we like to see babies do. And in typically developing babies, sometimes these happen really early on, even between, you know, 9 to 12 months, 12 to 15 months. We see babies who are moving along pretty well cognitively, and by that I mean how they think and how they understand. And hand-in-hand with that would go their receptive language skills. And so we're going to talk about first about some very basic kinds of requests that you want your children doing. And again, don't panic if you have a 2.5-year-old or a 2-year-old who's not doing these things. We're just trying to tell you, or not beat you over the head with, your kid is delayed, your kid is delayed. We're just trying to tell you, okay, these are the foundational skills. He's never going to understand something very complex like go get the red basketball and shoot it through the hoop if he doesn't understand these very basic things. So we always want to think about language as kind of like an example like building blocks, and we're going to talk about the foundation or the very first kinds of commands that we want kids to begin to understand when they're pretty young. Kate, do you want to interject in before I get going with these? I feel like I'm just blabbing on and on.
Which is okay, Laura. You know I'm just along for the ride here. one thing I will say, because as I wrote, I've used her tell him, show him, help him tagline because it's so simple that I can remember it and parents can understand it and kind of remember it as well. One thing, as I wrote it out, and Laura, you show this, and you kind of just gave an example, but I just will say, you kind of keep the verbal part going even if you're going to show them and even if you're going to help them. So I'm just interjecting that. So if you said, get the duck and put it in the water, and the child didn't respond and you showed them, you're still going to continue to say, get the duck and put it in the water, so that, again, we're giving them a little bit more help but keeping the words, hoping to add the meaning to those words. Sorry.
Yeah, and oh, well, that's perfect. I'm so glad that you brought that point up, because I'm such a talker anyway. Even if somebody tells me not to talk, I find that very hard to do.
Yeah.
So I would just naturally assume that parents would know that. And, you know, the main reason you're doing that is kids who have difficulty with receptive language skills, they aren't associating words with specific objects and actions. There's a breakdown there. They're not linking that duck, you know, in the context of your bath is that yellow little plastic bird-looking thing. You know, they're not making that association between that set of sounds they hear for that word and that object. So you have to keep relabeling things and recasting things, say it again and again and again in the most simple terms that you can so that kids with language delays really get that. And I think that's what I say to parents after I do tell them, show them, help them, is I've really been saying words are the problem. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what we're missing here. They're not understanding the words. Because I think when you boil it down to that point, they start to really realize, you know, and I don't know if you've had parents that have done this, Kate, they'll say, I don't understand how you can say that he's not smart. And I have to back up and say, no, I'm not saying he's not smart. I'm saying words don't mean anything to him yet.
Right. And so often in practice, we see day in and day out that kids, when they do see it, usually that's kind of the critical point where once they see it, oftentimes they do understand it, but the words are, you know, at some point pretty meaningless, you know. And if you show them, you see their little wheels turning and their eyes twinkling, and they go, aha, now I know what you were saying. But it's not until they see it that, you know, a lot of times they don't really understand it. And you kind of get the deer in the headlights look, I call it.
Right.
What? You know,
You know, I worked with a little girl today, and I did some of the same things that we're going to talk about tonight, some of the same tricks that you do, you know, kind of to teach comprehension or opportunities when we work on this. And we were cleaning up an activity. And it was that little linguist toy that we both have that I just love, and it's on the DVDs if you've had an opportunity to watch that. But as we're cleaning that up, I usually take two or three of those items and we'll say, get me the choo-choo, get me the cow, give me the plane, you know, and really have her pick that out from a set. And the mom was so observant today. She said, you know, I always really thought if she said it, that meant she understood it. But I can really tell that just because she's imitated your words, it doesn't necessarily mean that she's understood what you're saying. And it was so good for that mom to get to that point. You know, I think mom may have some processing issues herself.
Yeah.
You know, just with, you know, she's wonderful. I love this mom. But, you know, I was so glad that, you know, and I've said that to her before, but for her to really see that today and to see her little girl, she wasn't distracted. She wasn't thinking about something else. She was really looking when I, you know, would have three objects down there and, you know, I would say, get the lion. And she's looking, you know, first at the cow and then at the lion and, you know, then at the house and trying to decide, which one of that is lion? You know, and she would look at him and then look up at me like, I have no clue what you're talking about here. And then I would go, rawr, lion. And then she knew, because she's associated the sound with the object even more so than she did the word with the object. But I was so proud that mom said, you know, I really got to see that today. I got to see what you mean. You know, it's her comprehension. It's the word, her understanding that really is the problem, not so much her
ability
not saying the
word. And we see that so often, and a lot of times parents and sometimes even therapists incorrectly assume that if a child, if you say, get the ball, and he gets the ball, he can follow quote-unquote commands, and yet if you said, get the lion, you know, he's looking at you or not looking at you and not responding because he doesn't know that that lion word means that furry animal who says roar. So, you know, we spend a lot of time making sure, even if a child is talking, do they really understand? Do they really get those key parts of speech that kids at whatever given age are supposed to get? And a lot of times with late talkers, there is a comprehension component. They don't necessarily understand everything they're supposed to.
Right, and that happens with kids who are autistic as well. It happens a lot, where their expressive skills far outweigh their receptive skills or what they're able to understand. We were talking about that today. Kate, I told you about the family that I'm working with now, that the little girl is 2.5, and I worked with their older son, who's now 5 and in kindergarten. And he probably would not have gotten an autism diagnosis at 2 because in our city, sometimes if you make eye contact one time or say more than five words, you don't
not
get
to bash
that
any particular organization or anything, but
Or particular quote unquote developmental pediatricians, but we won't go there. But the you know, she was saying to me, and we had this conversation earlier. Gosh, his expressive skills this last round of testing that he had, his expressive skills were, you know, 20, 25 standard, or with using standard scores, 20 or 25 points higher, which is a pretty significant amount on the test. And, you know, looking at his test scores expressively, he really has early grammar. He has vocabulary. He says a lot of stuff. But, boy, turn it around and ask him to follow the same command, and he can't always do it. And so I was talking to the mom about that, and she said that his speech pathologist was surprised about that as well. And she said, don't you think that's an unusual pattern? And, you know, my response to her was, as it is when, you know, we have these conversations all the time, no, not with a kid with autism. It's frequently the case where we see their expressive skills or what they can say or especially what they can echo is far greater than what they can really understand. And I think one reason that he might look better to that speech pathologist is she works with him really within the confines of his self-contained classroom. And so she only sees him do functional things and routine things, whereas in a testing situation, you know, it's pretty black and white with, you know, with responding to pointing to a particular picture or completing directions that might be new to him that he probably didn't have an opportunity, you know, to practice before. It's just totally new in that testing situation, whereas he might look a little bit better in the classroom because he's likely heard it and done the things before that the speech pathologist would be asking him to do or observing him do. So I think that's, again, that speaks to your point about just because they can say it doesn't mean that they actually understand it. So we want to be really careful about that. Okay. All right, let's move on and talk about those first little requests that we have try to have kids do, and, you know, just kind of name some of these. And Kate, feel free to jump in here. I'm just using just some examples. And again, I'm sure you can come up with some better ones that I have right here. But one thing might be if you walk up to your child and say, you know, you want up, and if he doesn't understand what you mean, you know, then you're going to hold your arms out for him to hold his arms up and understand that you want to pick him up. Give me a kiss is one of my favorite ones. And again, you're going to say to your child, you know, give mommy a kiss. Give me a kiss. And if your little girl doesn't start to lean forward and pucker those little lips or do the big open mouth kiss, you know, then you're going to want to make the little kissy noise, you know, and try to really give that command again. And then if she's not still understanding what you want, then you're going to grab her little hands and pull her in toward you and give her a big kiss. Another big one that I think is on nearly every developmental checklist that I've ever seen is waving bye-bye. And that would be when you say to your child, you know, tell her bye-bye. You know, you really want to see that little hand pop up and start to wave. And then if he doesn't do it, again, you take his hand and you maybe touch his elbow a little bit and get him started, and you're showing him because you're waving your hand. And then if he still doesn't do it, you want to reach down and take his little hand and help him do it. And all the time, you're going to keep saying, wave bye-bye, 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 and really help him learn to associate meaning with that particular phrase.
And, Laura, where does the Rossetti have waving bye-bye? What age?
9 to 12.
And that's a weird one because HELP has it 7 to 9 months.
You know what? Now that I've said that out loud, it really might be 6 to 9.
Okay. I don't know. It seems like I've heard it from you that it was a little older on Rossetti, but anyway, 7 to 9 months, that is, you know, seems very young, but that's where the HELP has it. So let's say by 12 months, certainly it should be fairly automatic. You know, tell them bye-bye, hand goes up, and they wave.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now, so chat on about that while I do that, because goodness knows I probably can't talk and read a test right now.
Okay, well, I would just interject this, and that would be that we don't mean that, you know, I said fairly automatic, so I'm going to restate that. No child performs 100% of the time. They aren't little trained monkeys. But I'm saying on a fairly consistent basis, when your child is in a good mood and you say, tell grandma bye-bye or tell sissy bye-bye, they understand it. And more often than not, they will do it, you know, without any other model or help. They just put their hand up and do it. I don't mean to say that just because a child doesn't wave 100% of the time, there is an issue. Most certainly they are individuals, even at birth, and they do
right.
make choices. So, but, you know, if you spend five opportunities a day telling toys or siblings or daddy bye-bye and you don't get a response, then I think you'd have a hard time saying it's a consistent skill for any child. Don't you have a parent sometimes say, well, sometimes.
Yeah.
And the answer is
no.
Like, once. You know what I mean? Like, once. And the kid's maybe a year and a half, 2 years. And by that age, you know, it should be something they
have long since mastered.
Yeah. And sometimes parents, it's hard to say no to these things. And I think a lot of parents know that that's something babies do, and yet they're toddler isn't doing it, and so they want to see the glass half full, just as we all do, but we do mean fairly consistent, you know, not 100%,
right.
but at least 75%.
You're exactly right, and the Rosetti does have that at 6 to 9 months, so I stand corrected, so that's really consistent with the help.
Okay.
And really, typically developing kids without language problems really are doing it pretty well. I mean, don't you see children, I wave to children all the time at Walmart and in the grocery store. Or what happens a lot is that we are there to evaluate a two-year-old and the little sister over in the corner is waving and popping out bye-bye, you know, as we're gathering our toys ready to leave when the older brother or sister may not be doing that themselves. But I think that's real fair, 6 to 9 months, but certainly by 12 months,
mm-hmm.
kids should be doing that. And that would be a real, really big red flag. And again, I think that's on about every developmental checklist I've ever looked at, don't you think?
Yeah, it's just so universal, and it's an easy
right.
motion, and it really doesn't matter if it's perfect or pretty or, you know, a lot of kids will wave kind of to themselves, I accept that, you know, they've
right.
got their hand backwards, whatever, as long as there's
right.
some recognition,
motion.
You move that hand around and that's a bye-bye, I say, okay, that's good.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, other early kinds of things that you want your children to do. And again, let me reiterate, if you have a four-year-old that's still struggling to learn how to understand language, don't discount these early, early commands. If he's not following these kinds of commands, this is where you need to start. You don't need to work on ABCs or anything that that you feel like is more complex, because if he has not mastered these really basic requests, he's not ready to move on. Because, again, all of language is a foundation. We really have these basic skills, and more complex things come after. Another good early milestone would be when you ask a toddler to give you something and you've got your hand out. And so, say, he's holding his truck, and you say, give me the truck. Well, sometimes we know that toddlers don't necessarily want to hand that truck over. So if they are shrugging away and trying to hide it, you know they've understood it
yeah.
because they don't want you to have it. So I always mark that as a yes, even though they didn't really give me the object, because I think, oh, he understood it. He just doesn't want me to have it. But that would be something that you would want to do is hold excuse me, is hold your hand out when your child is holding a block or a ball or anything and say, give it to me, give mommy your ball, and see if your child will follow that command. And again, that's a lot of the time they're doing it because you've given the visual part, your outstretched hand. When kids don't necessarily do that, when I'm working with kids who have big receptive language delays, if they don't do it, then I, you know, try to really shake my hand a little bit, and I might take my other hand and point in my hand and say, here, give it here, give it here. And then if they don't do it, I usually will either maybe put it right under what they're holding and say, oh, give it to me, and kind of take it. If I think they're going to be mad, then I usually take my other hand and help them give it to me and then give it back really quick. But, you know, that's something that you certainly can work on And that's just a very basic kind of request that you want to do with a child. Another skill at this same developmental level is consistently looking at a person who says your child's name. So if you have a child who doesn't consistently respond to his name, you really do want to work on that and not just automatically assume that he's choosing to ignore you. And don't we hear that a lot, Kate, where they say, oh, he's just ignoring you. He just doesn't want to listen. And sometimes that is true, but more often than not, you know, it really is a language comprehension problem. They haven't learned to associate their own name and with themselves and that they should consistently respond.
And that's certainly something I know we both work into therapy, is saying a child's name over and over and over. For that reason, I'm bad about shortening names. I don't like Alexander. I like Alex because I say it so many times. I'm constantly saying their name, and that kind of helps them learn, oh, I'm supposed to be looking. I'm supposed to be responding. So, yes, many, many, many times, and we do hear that a lot. Oh, he knows. He just is ignoring me or you. Or I say, yeah, okay, if the TV's on, that could be the case. But if he's a couple feet away and you're calling his name and he's not turning and looking, a lot of times I'll kind of change the tone in my voice or,
me too.
You know, make it funny or make it louder, whisper it, just change it so that I see.
Or sing it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he going to respond to that if I change it? Because sometimes they... You know, if they are tuning out, you change it a little bit, or you'll say it with more, you know, drama, you know, or excitement, and they'll turn around and look at you. Oh, yeah, he does know. But other times, you know.
Yeah, not so much.
No, they're not really responding to it.
You know, and in the Giggle Games book that we've talked about a lot on previous shows, it talks about, or I think this is where it's from, really using a child's name like that so that when you're playing kind of a getcha game so that you're calling their name and they associate that with something that's really, really fun. And then they kind of learn, oh, you know, you might do, Zachary, Zachary, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you, Zachary, Zachary. And so, again, you know, that sounds really fun and like, oh, my goodness, she's going to tickle me. You know, so then they're going to want to respond then. And so that would be, you know, a way that you could change the name and kind of teach it in a fun context. And again, you don't always want it to be so punitive, for lack of a better word. Sometimes parents really only use a kid's name, you know, when they're in trouble. You know, Zachary!
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't probably look either if I had a tendency to kind of tune out language and I just kind of heard that tone. Some kids, that's the only way they'll respond to it. I had a little guy, and I think you saw this little guy briefly, little Kyle. Do you remember him? Last year, and his mom would often use, he really didn't respond to her calling his name unless she said it kind of in a firmer, meaner tone, mm-hmm. And she really thought that meant she had to do it that way, and I feel like he just understood her tone, and he knew that meant, boy, I better look right now, or I'm going to get it. So you do want to do some fun things to try to help them learn to consistently respond to names, too. I don't know if you have any more ideas you want to share about that, Kate.
I always do a lot of your where, oh, where, oh, where is, you know, if we're playing peekaboo or hiding, and then I use their name, you know, where, oh, where, oh, where is Zachary? And, again, it's a good way to make it fun, and they realize every time she says Zachary, she tickles me or she gets me or she, you know, plays peekaboo with me, and I use that one a lot.
I like that one, too. I think that's on one of the DVDs already. Excuse me, I know I hide toys and sing it, but for a kid, what you might want to do is hide them under a blanket, you know, again, and you do the peekaboo thing where you're calling them or, you know, that little song and with their name. Okay, the next kind of command at this phase would be performing a routine activity on verbal request, and that's like when you're about to put their shoes on and you say, give me your foot, and so the child knows the shoe is right there and they've done it a bazillion times. So that would be that they're helping you put the foot in the shoe because they've known that routine and they've begun to associate that particular word with, oh, she wants me to stick my foot in there. Other things would be, you know, when you're getting dressed, put your arm in here. So that's why it's so important when you're doing these daily routines, these things that you do every single day, bath time, bedtime, meal time, snack time, getting dressed, changing diapers, that you begin to really pay attention to using the same set of phrases over and over. And that's so important, again, for children with receptive language delays, because words are the problem. They have not begun to associate exactly what you're saying with an object or an action. So you want to use that same little set of phrases over and over and over so that they begin to understand what you mean.
And I see a lot in practice parents who don't necessarily use the words as they're doing those kind of everyday standard daily care activities, whether it be feeding or bathing or changing or, you know, and I want to say, oh, of course, you're good about saying it. I think it more than I say it. And sometimes it's either that they don't use the words with it much, or they use way too many words and they haven't simplified it enough so that they're saying, okay, now I need your other foot. Give me your foot. Put your foot in mommy's hand. I got to put shoe on. Okay, come on. And words. And if they had just said, give mommy your foot, and given them that hand gesture so that the child would link the meaning with the words. So it's hard sometimes to know how to put those things delicately or politically correct. But, you know, use the words, use them often and repeatedly, but keep it pretty simple when you're really targeting whether or not your child understands it.
Right. And I do think that really calls for a big amount of self-analysis on the part of a parent, and especially if the child with language delays is two or three or fourth on down the line. You know, you have other children, your school-age children, that you're saying, get your backpack, come on, we're going to be late again. I hate it when we're late for carpool.
Yeah.
And so you're just getting, you know, you're kind of getting the baby dressed and getting your toddler moving along too, and not even really taking advantage of those natural opportunities that rise all the time through the day to really help them understand. And again, it's those are the words that they really, really need. You know, they need to understand shoes. They need to understand foot and, you know, all those really basic requests that you want to have them do. And everybody's life gets so much easier when they do understand and when they start to participate and help with that stuff a little bit more. Okay, the next kind of request would be when your child looks at familiar objects or people when named. And so that's going to be, you know, if you have your child's favorite toy, if he's crazy about Elmo, you're saying, where's Elmo? Where's your Elmo? Let's find Elmo. So that he begins to look around and really search for that toy and help you find him. Or that you might say, Daddy's home. And when he hears those little words, he starts to look toward the door or get up and run toward your back door, so because he's anticipating that Dad's coming home, or he might run over to the window because you've said Daddy's home so many times that he's really linked. Okay, when she says this, that means he's about to come through the door. So, again, that's a familiar verbal routine that you want to use with your child over and over again. All right. Let's see, Kate, can you think of any other, let's talk about this, understanding simple questions related to routines. That would be like you're holding his cup and you're saying, do you want something to drink? And, you know, your child's going to reach for that drink. Or we were talking about just before the show started how kids with typically developing language, you know, a 12-month-old might really start shaking her head, yeah, I want that drink, and responding to that. But sometimes our kids with language delays don't get the whole yes-no thing or understand that they even need to respond until they're over two or sometimes even closer to two and a half. So yes-no is on the test or on the developmental milestone checklist pretty late for when we see it emerge with children who are having no difficulty understanding language at all, don't you think?
Yes, very. Because I see babies that I'm not working with, just siblings, and even my own children years ago. It was early. At least if it was a simple question, they shook their head yes or no, whether they said the words or not. They indicated they understood by gesturing very early. And I see babies literally 10, 11 months routinely, not again that I'm working with, but in the real world, who shake their head. You know, do you want to go outside? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, let's go.
Let's go, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Other things that they might understand, simple questions would be like, it's time for bath. You ready to go? Ready for bath? And then you would want to see them get up and start to go toward the bathroom. Or you say, it's time to eat. Are you hungry? And you see them, you know, drop whatever they're doing and move toward that high chair because they've understood that little particular set of words always means, oh, I'm about to get some food now. I need to get over to the high chair. So you do want to build those opportunities, again, into your daily routine so that you're asking the same question in the same way at the same time every single day. And this is, again, I cannot stress the importance of this with children with receptive language or language comprehension problems. Because, again, if they were going to get it the regular way, just from you picking, just by picking it up in conversation, they wouldn't have the problems that they're having already. So you need to be really, really focused and change what you're doing so that you can present these words in a way that will become meaningful to them and that you do provide those repetitions over and over and over so that they begin to link those meanings.
Just had this come up in a meeting. The dad, the mom and dad were having a discussion kind of at the end of the meeting, and the dad said, well, what do we do? And is this, obviously we're not doing something right because he's not talking, the child's almost two. And the mom said, or there's a developmental problem.
Right.
And I said, oh, I don't mean to be indelicate, but I think there's a developmental problem because
right.
Good mommy, good daddy, and it's a second child, and I'm sure that because he's a second child, he doesn't get quite as much attention, but he gets a lot.
Right.
And with loving grandparents all day, every day, and, you know, it's ideal situation, and yet, you know, fairly significant delay, and it's like, if it was everything was right, just like Laura said, the words would be clicking along, the child would be understanding readily. Really, normally kids do just kind of absorb language from being in a reasonably stimulating environment, and they start popping them out.
Even sometimes in a not-so-great environment.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, as a matter of fact, I said that because this particular dad was a police officer, so he goes to all sorts of places just like as I do, and I said, they even do in bad homes, because I was saying, this is a good home, you know.
Right.
This would
it's not
working.
Your fault.
Yeah, it isn't, which, you know, it's always ironic. The better the parent, the more likely they are to say, I did something wrong.
I evaluated a little girl yesterday who was teeny, like 14 months old. She's a late walker and is a late talker, and the mom is a special education teacher, and her four-and-a-half-year-old was so precocious, you know, so obviously she knows from a personal level how to do this, teach language, because her child is doing so well, and professionally she's a special ed teacher, and she still sat there and said, maybe I haven't taught her this, maybe I haven't worked with her enough, she is my second baby, I work full time, oh no, I've put her in daycare, and she just lumped all of this stuff, all of that guilt on her, and she did the same thing your dad did.
Yeah,
she just assumed so much of that was all about her. So when I'm saying change what you're doing, I'm not beating up on parents.
Right,
to say
it
that.
Is not that they didn't do it right.
Right,
they did, and this family has a six-year-old daughter who's, you know, into everything and doing great and talked. They told me when she was 24 months. She left the voice message on their answering machine.
And I believe that.
I do, too. As the mother of two daughters, you know, I totally believe it. And here's this little fella who has one word, ball.
Right, right.
So, and, you know, it's like, no, it's even though he's your second child, you know, really.
That's
but,
not it.
Yeah.
No.
So our point is, don't beat yourself up. We're not saying you didn't do it right. We're saying for that particular child, it isn't working. Even though you're doing it right for your average child, for that kid, we need to change some things so that they begin to get it
right
more consistently. So.
Right, and it is not a blame or a fault-finding recommendation at all. It's just saying he's not getting it the regular way, so we're going to have to change what we're doing so that hopefully he can begin to understand some things. Okay, I think we've already talked about this one. Gestures in response to verbal requests. That would be like waving bye-bye that we talked about. We give mommy a kiss. It would be like if your child is playing with Elmo or a doll that you say, you know, give your baby a kiss, and he's going to lean forward and kiss his baby. That would be when you're getting to play little social games like pat a cake, or if you're going to sing If You're Happy and You Know It, clap your hands, and your baby's going to know to put his hands together and start to clap when you say that. Again, anything that he has to understand the words and then perform a little gesture based on what you've asked him to do. So those are just some early, early things that we want him to do. Okay, along with this, and Kate, I just surprised you with this right as we were about to go on the air. I said, oh, we're also going to talk about cause and effect and object permanence. You know, these are two really important cognitive skills that are, again, very early basic concepts that children have to be able to understand before they move on to understanding language and before they move on to being able to do more mature play. Do you want me just to talk about those, Kate, or do you want to take over since that's
the kind of cognitive thing? Feel free. You will not offend me.
Okay.
I'm nodding on my end.
Okay, there you go. Object permanence means that your child understands that even though he can't see an object, it's still there. And the best way to do that, or the best way that you can tell if your child understands this, and again, this is a game we play with babies all the time, is that you're sitting there playing with them and you cover up something that they're playing with, and you want to see them reach down and take that blanket off because they realize, just because I can't see it doesn't mean that it's disappeared. You know, and it's so funny to see a kid who doesn't have object permanence really, really look around like, where did that go? And they don't understand, I need to pull the blanket off. Or the kid who doesn't respond at all. I mean, there's no, you get no recognition or you can't see any kind of glimmer on their face that they even realize that the toy's gone. That's, you know, very, very sad to me. But, you know, object permanence, again, is a skill that it's a pretty basic one. Kate, when is it on your test? 6 to 9 months?
I was just grabbing it. My test makes a big distinction between all the layers of things, which, honestly, I gave up even trying to do years ago.
Me either.
Ago.
The screens, they call those screens, yeah. I think, on that test, and they want you to cover something up like 3 times. And
yeah, and then you're supposed to move it without them seeing. Talking about an unrealistic testing situation, I figure if I put it in something and they can't see it, or I cover it, and they can't see it, then they get object permanence. That's about as far as I go, but I'm going to look.
Okay, and you know, you see kids doing that. Like, do you remember when your kids would be in their cribs and they would, like, lose a passy under a receiving blanket or two, and boy, they are pulling those blankets off trying to find the darn passy. You know, so it does kind of happen in real-life situations, too, or they drop something from the high chair and they look down like, where did that go? Or something rolls under the couch and they know to get down and bend down and look under there and retrieve their toy or a ball that they've lost. But it's a pretty basic cognitive skill, and we do
want to
see that.
Okay, you
want
it just surprisingly early, Laura. At least it is to me. Finds hidden object when watching object covers. So if you took the baby and they showed some interest in the baby, or let's say a ball for a boy, whatever, not to be sexist there, but they do love their balls, and you covered it up and they saw you do it. The test says 4 to 6 months.
Yeah, wow.
That he should have some recognition. It's under the blanket and maybe reach for it, or, you know,
right,
make some gesture or overture to let us know, yeah, he knows it's under there.
Right.
4 to 6 months. Mm-hmm.
Well, I believe it.
Yeah.
So there you go. So object permanence is certainly a really early skill that you're going to want to make sure your child is mastered. The other one is cause and effect. And, boy, we have a little client who has really challenged us with this one. She's a little girl that we both adore that has Rett syndrome, which is, of course, on the autism spectrum. And it's pretty debilitating because so many children with Rett syndrome have really developmental challenges, and so we've worked on cause and effect for a long time, and this little girl has some motor issues too, So she always, you know, she's great at pushing buttons. That is her forte. But she doesn't always even really care. You know, that's the cause, but she doesn't always really care about what the effect is. If she's pushed the button and the balls come down, the thrill for her is pushing the button. It's not necessarily looking for that ball. So we've talked about that a lot, about, okay, do we give her credit for that? Do we not give her credit for that? Does she really understand it? No. But is she trying? Are we moving toward that skill of her really kind of getting both parts of that? And I think for this little girl, the answer is, as long as there's a button, she doesn't really care what's truly going to come next, unless it's something visual or something. I think she has learned, like with her little computer things, to really look for the visual reinforcement, don't you? But as far as like the ball coming out or any, I can't think of any other toy that she might have, unless there's some kind of light thing going on. I can't say that she would always get that skill.
Yeah.
With the little racetrack, she's really good at flicking the lever, but I'm not sure she cares about the cars going down the spiral. So we've had that discussion a lot. Do you give them credit for cause and effect or no?
Yeah. I'd say the earliest ones that all kids seem to have, whether we like it or not, are the what I call bells and whistles toys. Push the button, the lights go off, the music goes off. Those are baby toys, but they, on some level, understand. All I have to do is tap, 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 or bam, 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 and it activates the toy. And if they're doing that and they continue to do it, you have to assume they understand, oh, the music and the lights went off because I banged on the button.
Right.
Which is great for a baby, not so great for a 2-year-old.
Absolutely.
I mean, good that they get it, but not good that that's the way they're spending their day.
And that they're kind of stuck in that developmental phase, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The other one that the help mentions, and we see this a lot, and I tend to look for this in young babies, is if you're doing some, say you're doing ride a little horsey, or you're doing patty cake, or you're just bouncing them on your knee and making some sounds as you do it, and you stop. Do they move to get you to go some more? I mean, that's a pretty early, but they get, maybe if I wiggle my little body, she'll keep me bouncing on her knee, or she'll keep the song going, or my hand's moving with patty cake. And normally they, you know, if things are moving along appropriately, then they do. You know, they
when you say peekaboo, are we going to play peekaboo, they automatically cover their face with their hands or throw that blanket up because they know that that's coming next, and they've learned to associate that. You know, one thing that I recommend on all my reports and when I'm just talking to parents about language comprehension is to give kids little requests or commands for things that they are already about to do. And again, I think this comes pretty naturally to a lot of people. They don't even realize they're doing it, so that when your child is holding the ball, you're saying, throw the ball, throw it. And, you know, you just naturally kind of, when you see that they're about to launch the ball, you would naturally kind of interject that. And that, again, I think helps really help them link meanings with what they're already about to do. The other thing it does is really get them used to following your verbal request, and for lack of a better word, obeying you, so that you want to use those kinds of opportunities too to kind of really build that in. Mommy says it, I do it. Mommy says it, I do it. And I do caution parents, though, just because you're doing that doesn't mean that he's necessarily understood it. So I don't want them to think, okay, you know, he's learned it after a time or two, but I do ask parents a lot to really get in the habit of doing or saying what a kid is about to do anyway. I hear this, though, all the time. A kid will, and I had this discussion today with a grandpa who came in right at the end of a session. It was that earlier little girl I was talking about who's got some receptive language issues. And while she's sitting there playing with the ball and the ball and hammer toy and putting the balls in and happily playing with it, I mean totally 100% focused on it, he's saying, come here, give me a kiss, come give me a hug, come give me a kiss, give me a kiss, come give me a hug. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, she doesn't understand. And I said, yes, I think she does. She's just more interested in the balls right now. And so you do want to kind of pick your times when you're doing that. I said, a better thing for you to say would be, put it in, hit it, and really give her the words for what she's about to do. So just wanted to throw that in there. And there's a pretty long section about that on Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1, where a little boy's playing with a ball, and I'm giving him some various directions and talking about how we, as parents, we need, and as therapists, we need to get in the habit of really giving them directions for what they're already about to do, again, so that they link the meanings and certainly what they're paying attention to. But how many times, Kate, do you see parents who kind of miss the opportunity of teaching because they want their kid to move on from something they're doing to something that they've thought of to do?
Quite often. A lot of times it's more academic, quote unquote, and not necessarily interesting or appropriate for a child that age or that developmental level, but...
Right, and I've heard you talk about, a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about how things just kind of come up, like the dust bunnies. You know, the kid might think that's funny, so then you're going to teach, blow, blow, and sit there and blow with them because that's what they are paying attention to and that's what they think is funny, instead of saying, come over here and read this book. Come sit down. We're going to look at the book. You know, when they have no interest in wanting to do the book. And that's, you know, what that reminded me of today. And after, with this grandfather, and after the little girl, after we cleaned up the ball toy, I stood her up, I turned her around and had her look at him, and she just lit up because truly I don't think she realized he was there until then. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, now go give him a kiss and a hug. And she ran right over and did it. You know, she understood it fine in the context of that. But while she was playing with that ball toy, one, she was so focused on it, she couldn't have possibly made herself leave from there. But, you know, the grandpa, because I just had the big talk about the real problem is she doesn't understand language, when he's asking me when she's ever going to talk, you know, he said, you're right, she didn't understand that. And so he kind of took it a little bit too far. But, you know, use your opportunities. Talk about what they're paying attention to. Okay. Let's see. You know, one thing that in the DVDs and Teach Me to Listen and Obey 1 and 2 that I said, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, you know, as parents, we talked about it today too, we do want to try to really interject these same words, these same opportunities to follow commands all day long, but don't forget the value of really playing with your child and working on language comprehension in the context of play. And earlier I mentioned this, I really focus a lot on comprehension when we're cleaning up an activity, so that when you finish putting all of the pieces into the puzzle, when it's time to clean up, instead of just, you know, mom picking it up and putting it on the shelf, you might want him to give you the pieces, and you might say, where's the dog? Give me the dog first. And then, you know, he'll give you the dog, and then you ask for the cat, and then you ask for the horse. And so cleanup time, I think, is a great time to really focus on comprehension and seeing what a child really understands. And I do that fairly often. I think before I start working on comprehension, though, I do make sure that we've had enough opportunities to play with that toy and that I'm pretty sure that they understand the words. And we have a little set of guys, Kate, that we work with that you were so good to point out to that mom when she was, I think a couple of months back, when we were talking to her about, you know, really doing language in daily routines. You know, and she was talking about the bathtub toys. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Not really.
She was, okay, and I can't say her name. I'm going to not break that confidentiality thing, but finally for once. But, you know, she was talking about playing with the bathtub toys and that she might say, where's the duck, where's the duck? Well, these little guys still aren't linking, consistently understanding what the duck is. So your recommendation to her was, well, you might not want to question so much about it as just to say it over and over and over again. So my point about this that I'm so poorly trying to make is you do have to make sure that they understand some of those words before you start with the questions and really kind of quote-unquote testing that. You know, you want to make sure that it's something that they've understood and heard enough. You know, it's never that cleanup thing that I do with kids. I don't do it right off the bat with kids that have huge receptive language problems. I just focus a lot on really using those words And like with this little girl that I'm talking, that I've been talking about tonight, I started working with her in October, and I'm just now to the point where I'm asking her to kind of do that cleanup routine and give me one thing at a time. Does that make sense? Did I sort of convey
that?
Yeah,
I mean, you kind of spoke to this a couple weeks ago about teaching and not testing, and I do think that parents a lot of times do kind of get in the habit, especially if they have a firstborn who was a performer and then they have the secondborn who isn't, and they're saying things like that, and it shuts kids down so fast because
they're just done. Yeah.
Right, because it's a formula for failure. You know, get the duck. Well, they don't know the duck, so all of a sudden mommy's saying, that's not the duck, that's the horse. I just said that, you know.
Right.
In worst case scenario, or they're correcting them and... So like you said, and you do that cleanup better than anybody, but I have improved as I've watched your DVDs on really, and it's amazing how compliant and agreeable and willing to work kids are on that, especially once they know that, oh, you clean it up and you get the next toy.
Right, right.
And, you know, part of their incentive is, okay, I'm done with this puzzle, so if I really try hard and get this over, we'll move on to something else I like. And they will really, really try hard.
Yeah, and with kids who are a little bit older, and I think this is in Listen and Obey 2, where I had the three little boys that are there, and one of the little boys really struggled with processing language. For him, he really did understand, but just kind of in the context of doing it with my brothers and not being so distracted, you know, I really think later on he's going to, you know, have an auditory processing disorder diagnosis. But, you know, you can, with an older kid, really kind of make a joke out of that almost. You know, no, that's not the dog. I said the dog. Where's the dog? But I don't do that with kids that I think it's a real language comprehension problem because, one, they probably don't get the humor in that, and, two, it's overcorrecting. You know, you do just want to say, oh, dog, let's find the dog, you know, and kind of repeat the command rather than doing a bunch of, like you just said, your example, that's not the dog, that's the horse. I just told you that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't want to lapse into that. You want to kind of keep the playfulness and your whole kind of animated thing and not break it up with comments that are, you know, overcorrecting.
Sometimes I'll do stuff, especially early on, when... You know, they may get some of them, but I know once I get past dog, cat, pig, whatever, cow, I'm going to lose them. Then
right.
I'll do something like, you know, get the sheep. Uh-oh, that's not the sheep. And I'll take the sheep and go, me, bam.
Yeah,
you
that's
know, key. So that it's a joke, but I'm
right.
not saying, no, that's not right, you know.
Right.
So you're still correcting them, but in a playful, you know.
Right. Keeping it fun, because you're going to want to keep them there. And, you know, it's hard for them, for so many of those little kids with receptive language delays, they so don't get it. And just the least little bit of discouragement, I think, either causes them, one, to avoid, meaning they're moving on to something else, or two, to, you know, completely shut down or fall apart. You know, you'll hear it, see a tantrum, they'll throw what you've asked them to do, you know, kick the whole puzzle out of the way, you know, because it's just so darn frustrating. And when kids are at that point, I move on. I don't even try at that point.
No.
I don't even say, no, we're going to clean up the rest of this puzzle right now. I don't care that you don't want to do it. We're going to do it. You know, when you see those signs that they've had it. Move on. Clean it up yourself. Move on.
Yeah, and maybe pounding the balls would be a good activity. Yeah.
Yeah.
It might be time for that.
Or jumping off the couch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something fun where you're going to give them an opportunity to, one, be successful with something, and two, move on. And I hate it when I've got one mom right now who really gets mad when I move on. She'll say, no, I think we should finish this. And, you know, we about have a confrontation right there, you know, because she's saying, no, she said, get the whatever. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, please, let's just move on. She's not going to want to see me coming through this door next week if you make this so painful for her right now.
I've had those moms. And what I find is once they've had an opportunity to get better at things and experience, you know, some kids, I call them flitters. They go from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. And I can see why parents are concerned about that. On the other hand, I have found that if you just kind of let them do that and build on their strengths as they go over time, they do get, you know, their ability to stay on one task improves, their successes
right.
and their experience with their experiences improve. And so, you know, it may be a couple months, but in a couple months they will sit and finish the whole puzzle, or they will
right.
sit and do whatever structured adult-directed activity you want them to do. But if you don't kind of go at their natural pace and what they're still enjoying, then you're going to have the meltdown and the puzzle piece on your forehead because
right.
you've pushed it too far.
And
Laura
so
and I are very big on keep
it
fun, keep it playful.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and you can tell when they pat it. The other thing that I do when I'm doing that comprehension stuff and we're cleaning up is that when I see that they're frustrated, I really only try to ask them stuff that they know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did that today with my little friend, you know, when there were things that she didn't know, and I thought, okay, she's done, I think she probably did 13 or 11 of those 15 objects before she got tired of it. And I thought, yes, we have arrived. Because no way could she have done that a few months ago. Yeah, and so at that point, you put the rest of them in and you move on. And you never want to sacrifice a child's interaction with you or his level of engagement with you all for the sake of getting two more puzzle pieces put away. You know, that's just silly. That's just, I hate it when I hear
parents
do it.
And I've heard of other therapists doing that, and I think, oh, kidding.
I
mean,
I know.
He just throws him into a huge meltdown over he wouldn't do two of the 10 pieces, you know. But one thing you might do on that is if you're cleaning up and you don't think they really know them, but you'd like to kind of continue to work on comprehension, is to take two pieces and say, do you want the duck or the horse?
Right,
and even if
yeah.
the child isn't verbal, if they reach for one, again, you're going to narrate what they're doing and say, you want the horse. You got
Yay!
The horse. Put the horse in. Right.
Yeah.
So that
yeah.
they're, again, they're hearing those words linked with the object. Hopefully that takes on meaning for them, but you didn't set up a situation for them to be wrong because you probably, I mean, if you knew they weren't sure or didn't know, then you're still
yeah.
working on following commands and giving the words meaning, but not necessarily, nope, wrong. We're
right.
going to have
and
to start over.
Yeah, and if they've missed three or four in a row, I think, well, guess what, Laura? You get to teach this again next week because
yeah.
they did not get it. And at that point, if they've missed three or four in a row, I would start singing the cleanup song and put everything in the bag and just know, boy, we got to work on those words a little bit harder.
Yeah,
and
that's
narrate
when I start
a little bit
in.
More.
Tell it, boom, boom. They'll usually do that.
yeah. Yeah. All right, get it in.
Boom.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cute. Throw it in. Yeah. So you just want to move on at that point. And, you know, I think there are parents and therapists who belabor the point. You know, it might make a kid miss 12 or 13 in a row, and I don't want to do anything that I'm completely horrible at.
No.
And neither does a 2-year-old, because on some level they do kind of know. All right, we're almost to the end. I do want to say that children at this level, you really shouldn't use flashcards as a teaching tool. I absolutely hate flashcards with most children under 3, but I surely hate it with children who are still at the point of just learning what different words mean, or, you know, don't have very big receptive language vocabularies, meaning that they're not understanding lots of objects, can't retrieve a lot of really simple familiar things. So why in the world would you want to sit down with a set of 30 flashcards and try to teach a kid to identify the pictures if he can't even do a lot of real-life things? So save the flashcards. Let the school-age speech therapist do that. Burn your flashcards. You know, I hate that. I just absolutely hate it. The only time that I do flashcards with kids is if they are kind of obsessed with them anyway, and it's like one of their two activities that they like to do. You know, that would be the only time I would do flashcards. I did have this set of triplets several years ago that whose mom was an OT, and they loved flashcards. So we did them only because she had done them, you know, with them since they were teeny tiny babies. But that's the last time I even used my flashcards, really. And I think a lot of therapists over-rely on those.
Oh.
I still like puzzles, but sometimes I don't even think puzzles are good for kids because it's, you know, we should be doing lots of real-life activities and real-life play, not, you know, a therapist might take in books, flashcards, and a puzzle. I mean, don't you just want to shoot them before they even get to the door? They're bad.
Can we mention it was a speech therapist who did that? Yeah, there are a lot of
There are a lot of speech therapists who do it. Yeah, mm-hmm. They do.
The one thing I like about puzzles is that, one, it gives them some fine motor, you know,
right.
practice, and two, they're matching pictures, which is good. So there's some additional benefit there. But, yeah, lots of flashcards. And, you know, I get to bash on speech therapists. Laura, you ended up seeing this child, and he's the star of one of your DVDs now. But, a year or so ago, there was a little boy I saw who had receptive language and expressive language issues, and he had a speech therapist. And the kid basically hated therapy with her and would throw a big, huge fit and cry. And I would, you know, he was doing really well with me. Of course, I was using the Laura Mize approach to speech, to developmental intervention, a.k.a. speech therapy. And he was doing great. He was signing, he was talking, he was beginning to place meaning with words. And, you know, we were making great progress, I felt, and so did the mother. But weekly she would tell me, it's horrible, he doesn't like her, he just cries. And I'd say, well, what is she doing? He doesn't cry with me ever. Well, pictures. She brings the flashcards in a book. Yeah. And she'd sit him at the table. And it was meaningless and not fun for him, and he would throw a fit the way most 2-year-olds would have in that situation.
Yeah, 2-year-olds struggling with language. I mean, that's not even to say a lot of typically developing 2-year-olds don't like flashcards. And then you add it to a kid who doesn't get words. I mean, that's just crazy.
Let alone that pictures are symbolic, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this therapist, mom kind of finally talked to her, and she said, well, you know, she's a developmental interventionist. She gets to play. This is what I have to do because I'm the speech therapist. And I was like,
oh, that cracks me up.
Okay. It wasn't too long after that Ms. Lark came in and showed them the mother that, you can play as a speech therapist too.
Yeah, that's so funny, and I can't believe that parents would even buy that. But, you know,
this was a highly educated mother.
Yeah.
And she
bought that. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, it was months and months and months.
She would say to me, I can't believe you can do speech this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just kind of laugh and go, what do you think Kate's doing? You know, it's speech. We call it DI, but it's language. It's the same darn stuff. Why wouldn't you be able to do it the same way?
And I remember when I told her about you, she said, well, doesn't she have to kind of do the pictures and the, you know, no. Not done properly. Nope. I know that's what that other therapist is telling you. And that kid responded beautifully. And the fact is, 99% of all young children do. If you make it playful and fun and child-directed, and by that I mean use things that they instinctively like, you will have so much more success than trying to force a 2-year-old to be in an 8-year-old classroom, which is essentially what that's doing.
It's like expecting them to tie their shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the same kind of above their head skill level that you're really trying to get them to do, and especially for kids who are struggling to learn language. So, you know, it's crazy. And, you know, let me go take the other position, because if there are any speech pathologists that are listening to this and say, Laura, when we test children, we use the test manual, which is all pictures.
Yeah.
And that's true. But if they're not there yet, they're not there yet. And making them sit through those things that they're not interested in, they're not learning, you know. And haven't you heard therapists say this too? And, oh, my gosh, if I hear one more physical therapist say this, I may just go for their throats myself. They'll say, it doesn't matter if he's crying, he's still learning. Oh, and you had there was a DI.
I had a DI say that while in my presence. Yeah. And, of course, it was 2 minutes that I got out of the meeting and said to you on the phone, learning to hate therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, come
learning
on.
To hate
yeah.
you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're learning, all right.
Yeah,
I don't think that kids learn anything constructive or productive or meaningful if they're screaming and running the other direction or trying to hit you because they're so frustrated. No.
Yeah, they're learning, this lady is mean and I never want to see you again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I guess that's our soapbox for the night because we're at the end of our hour. But, you know, next week we're going to follow up with this and talk about teaching your child to move on from there. These ideas next week are going to be for children who already understand the basic commands that we've talked about tonight. it's going to be that next step. It's going to be starting to teach your child those different word classes, or as we call them in school, parts of speech, helping your child learn to understand verbs or action words, prepositions, those location words, descriptive words, pronouns. We're going to give you some tricks for teaching those. And again, those things are all from Teach Me to Listen and Obey 2, and they're on my website at teachmetotalk.com. So if you haven't had a chance to check out those DVDs, check it out. And that's all for tonight, Kate. Thanks for a great show.
Let me just say this. Those things are a lot easier to teach in play than they are with pictures, aren't they? All of those.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah. And, you know, I think lots of those companies make a lot of money off convincing therapists and parents that you have to have the set of verb flashcards to teach verbs. And I would say to that, a big old Mississippi, nuh-uh. You know, you need to teach those while you're doing. And no better time to teach action words than when you're actually acting, when you're doing those things.
Right.
So we're going to talk about
when
all that stuff.
When baby's crying, boo-hoo-hoo, sad is a lot more obvious than the picture of the baby who has dry tears in a little flashcard. So
yeah,
anyway, we will get into those specifics next week.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay, bye.
Bye.